This podcast is brought to you by St. Joseph's Episcopal Church in Boynton Beach, Florida, in the United States of America. You can find us at stjoesweb.org. Come visit us when you are in town.
All right. On August 28, 1982, I was ordained into the Roman Catholic priesthood, and that is the feast day of St. Augustine. The words I just read as our prayer are Augustine's words, and they summarize the ultimate goal of our pilgrimage journey, to find our fulfillment in God. Those people and those places where we encounter our fulfillment in God and the Celtic approach to Christian discipleship are known as thin places. Thin places where the veil between heaven and earth is so thin that the kingdom of God can easily break through. So today, I want to talk about thin places. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. It seems a bit disingenuous for me to feed you for 23 and a half years and then talk about anything thin. But here we are. Today is emotional because we've been on a pilgrimage together here and have encountered God together here. St. Joseph's is our thin place. In the words of one of my favorite poets, T.S. Eliot, when speaking of pilgrimage places, writes, "You are not here to verify, instruct yourself, or inform curiosity, or carry report. You are here to kneel where prayer has been valid." Prayer has, and is, and will continue to be valid here. It's like Joseph and Mary in that reading from Luke today. They went up to the temple for the festival every year. We don't think of it often, but Jesus was presented in the temple as an infant, their thin place, and then went back every year. When Joseph found Jesus in the temple, it must have been a real God moment, literally, when Joseph realized, of course he's in the temple. It's our thin place. It's natural that Jesus would take it as his as well. So today, I acknowledge and highlight some of our thin places. It's difficult to choose what to share and who to mention. So I made a decision. Today, I'm talking mainly about dead people who've gone to heaven, so that way no one here will be upset that they didn't make the cut. Mary Allinson. Mary was the character and leader of our altar guild for years. Mary had a thin place in this church. It was the fifth row from the back on the aisle for the 7:45 service. And every Sunday, we would see her march in, count out five pews, and park it right there. It was such an important place for her that when we were redoing the sanctuary and had to worship in the parish hall and set up rows of chairs, the first Sunday Mary comes in and we watch her, she counts five rows of chairs on the left on the aisle, and there she sat. Mary had a thing about keeping things in order. She was concerned about her rector, who could lose things once in a while. So when Harry McDaniel and I needed to go borrow a screwdriver, we went into their secret room back there, and she said, "Now you guys turn around because I don't want you to see where I keep my tools." Shortly after I was here as rector, I was standing in the church when it started to rain. And the altar guild, led by Mary, started running around the church, placing buckets in strategic places around the church. When I asked what they were doing, She said, well, that's where the water is going to fall from the roof leaks. And it did. And encountering this for several rainstorms, I asked the former rector, Father Mike Cassell, to take me on a tour of this leaky church. And so Father Mike took me around and pointed several areas out around the church and said to each one, starting over there, see that leak? That was there when I arrived here 16 years ago. See that waterfall that used to come above that window right there? He said, yeah, that waterfall was here when I got here 16 years ago. And on it went. And as I'm thinking about 16 years of a leaky roof, that's not good. So the vestry bites the bullet and found the funds to replace the roof. So one day, as that project began, Mary runs into my office and says, Father Marty, it's raining sand in the church. So we go over to church to discover that when the outermost tiles of the church roof were removed, there was no longer any of that protective black tar paper around. It was gone. And even the wood was gone in many places. These pieces were from the roof. There were places where the rot and decay had dissolved the wood, places where the nails had rusted out and the water leaked through. There were places that there was a 5-foot by 5-foot hole where we could look up and see the heavens. It was only the collective pressure of those flat tiles against one another that was keeping that roof from crashing in. Now, before you all run for the exits, they fixed it a long time ago. The power of water dripping over time, 16 plus years. Think about that. The power of water consistently over time. Is that not what our baptism is all about? Is that not why we pour water on the heads of the infants in our families? Because we know that growing up in this thin place, surrounded by a loving church community, the power of that water will enable those thin place encounters over the lifetime of our pilgrimage journey. In 1998, I was received into the Episcopal priesthood in this thin place. Fred Masterman, who at the time was the canon of the ordinary on the bishop's staff, he came and he was to preach the sermon for the first and he decided, as Fred often did, to have visual aids, and his visual aid was a piñata. And in the midst of his sermon, he talked about how I was to be the piñata priest. You know how a piñata works. You hit it with a stick until it breaks open, and it spills forth treats for all to enjoy. In the light of that image, perhaps this is what our relationship is meant to be broken open like the roof. There we go. So that the wood can come forth. And we open that thin veil between heaven and earth to experience God. It worked better at 9:30. You get the idea. Put simply, We have experienced in the thin places we've shared, blowing the roof off this place and letting the kingdom come in. Now, our dear departed friend Paul Condras would never like a sermon I gave in which I didn't include a joke. So here goes. A priest, a singer, and a chef walk into a bar. Then I sat down and ordered a drink. You have enabled me in these years to break open my own gifts, and in turn, you have been so willing to break open your own. And in so doing, we have found those thin places together in the power of that baptismal water. St. Joseph's is a model, for the laity is the primary ministers of our church, as the prayer book says, and I'm grateful for that. Part of the vocation of a priest is to pronounce the blessing, and that's not just at the end of the service, but to help us see where God is breaking through in those thin places in our daily lives. And I think that every single one of you who has been called to not jobs, but ministries in this church have found those thin places. The priest's vocation is also to administer the sacraments. Those milestone moments in our lives when we recognize God coming down and breaking through, and we are marked, transformed. It's the thin place of a Justin Fox Hall. Having seen some of his fellow pilgrims to me youth be the first to be baptized here in my time, and then later bursting into the sacristy, excitingly exclaiming, "I want to be baptized." And we experience God breaking through. It's the faith, if we could put the first slide up. It's the faith of a people like Herb Collins. Herb still holds the record for having taken Episcopal 101 10 times. He weekly took the Palm Tran shuttle from his place when he could no longer drive. And when he could no longer walk on his own, instead of struggling his way, he had a cane, later a walker, but he insisted to come forward to receive communion at this rail. And through Herb, we experience God breaking through. It's the dedication of a Pat Shanley, who tirelessly worked with Herb to run our coffee hour for years. Every Sunday, there were Sundays where she was here before I was, and that's pretty hard. There was one particular time when Pat had an accident, and she ended up in the emergency room at Bethesda all night long. And instead of just going home, she came to St. Joseph's to write a note. And the note said this at 4:20 a.m. "Dear coffee hour friends, I just have to take a sick day today. I've been in the emergency room at Bethesda because of an accident last night. I was setting up bill payments when the phone rang. In my rush to the phone, I tangled my legs with one of the chairs, took a header, hit my head on the vertical of the kitchen cupboard. Now, don't try to grill the bagels," which she did every week. "Just cut them and put them out. There are muffins also and other goodies, which the Daughters of the King save for coffee hour. Sorry to let you down." She was in the emergency room all night long. And the kicker to the story is, now she's leaving and going out to the parking lot, and Rev. Mary Naughton is arriving, aware that Pat had been in the hospital. And Mary, who's an ex-nun, and Pat, who was also an ex-nun, Mary says, "What are you doing here?" What did Pat say? You've been in the convent. You know how this works. Suck it up, sister, and carry on. Wow. What commitment. This is the thin place of a Wendy Tobias. Entering the priest's sacristy one day and through her tears saying, I think I'm called to be ordained. And we experience God breaking through ever since. It's the thin place of a John Weston, who was experiencing some sort of blindness and in the act of receiving communion at the rail right over there, suddenly got this excited look on his face because God broke through and suddenly he could see again. And we experience God breaking through. It's the blind phone call received when the person at the other end introduces himself as, I'm your new organist. And the intervening years show that the gift of David Clio Morse is so much more and a gift of so many blessings. And to this day, through him, we continue to experience God breaking through. The next slide. It's the thin place of gathering into a crowded hospital room at Bethesda with three generations of the Sedaris Russell family, where Gay and John were to renew their wedding vows for their 52nd wedding anniversary. John was on his deathbed. He could no longer speak. So we did the wedding vow renewal with his children and grandchildren present, reciting his part of the wedding vows. And God broke through. It's the sacred thin place of pronouncing, and for me, at times, receiving those incredible words of absolution and confession. God forgives you all your sins. And we experience God breaking through. It's the sacred thin place of driving a repentant person to serve their time in federal prison and gathering on the parking lot outside the entrance gate, laying hands and anointing before he surrenders himself to serve his time. Next slide. And on the very next day, being able to gather with Catherine McLeod and her terminally ill husband, Bob McLeod, on the porch of their North Carolina home. And there, gathered with their children and grandchildren, we celebrate Eucharist together for one last time. And all the family being able to lay hands upon him together as he was anointed. And each person in turn able to share how much they loved him. And we experience God breaking through. It's the sacred thin place of George and Marie Putnam. Next slide. Now, Marie was one of our loyal altar ministers in the waning days of the former Rite 1 745 service. She would always lead Father William and me out of the sacristy, and her dry wit and timing were impeccable. One particular day, with a single-digit turnout in the congregation, Marie opened the sacristy door for us to begin the service. She took a look at the few people gathered, turned to look at William and me, and said, well, if a fight breaks out, we stand a pretty good chance. And then solemnly began the procession as William and I can hardly hold it together. Well, Marie served at the altar a lot. And you know, before we redid all this, there were stairs in different configurations. It was an obstacle course and an accident waiting to happen. And one visit here, Bishop Friday tripped and almost broke his neck. And it was the next week that Marie then came and to work at the altar as a minister. She tripped and almost broke her back. And the next day, George Putnam appears in my office, hands me a big check and says, "Fix that." But he came with a condition. George told me that he didn't want anyone to be aware that he was the donor while he was still alive. But he wanted something special. Next slide. You see the construction. We go to the next one. He wanted a brass plate to be buried in the concrete underneath the tile that would say that this sanctuary renovation was given in honor of the 40th wedding anniversary of George and Marie Putnam. When the renovation was complete, Father William and I stood directly above where that brass plate was buried. And George and Marie renewed the vows of their marriage. And ever since then, at our traditional services, this is why I stand here, to invite us to share the peace. Because of Marie and George, God broke through. And in that ministry itself, we're experiencing God in so many ways. The next slide. Ruby Van Royen. Our parish hall is named Van Royen Hall because Ruby gave the funds to build it. She led the women's group, if we see the next slide, with the project to create and fashion all of the pillows that adorn our communion rail and the chairs and over in the Lady Chapel. It was a 4-year project, but under Ruby's leadership, it was completed in less than 2 years. When Ruby heard of our plan to redo the sanctuary, she summoned me to a meeting with her. She said, "You are going to keep those pillows, Father Marty, aren't you?" "Oh, yes, Ruby. Oh, yes, of course." And then hurried to get Father William involved to help to design a communion rail that would accommodate all of these pillows. I think we are the only sanctuary that is designed to accommodate the pillows. But Ruby was also a competitive ballroom dancer. She lived to be 107. She competed into her late 90s, oftentimes winning in her age group because she was the only one in it. But she was quite the dancer. If we could try to show that first video. This is one, she was in her mid-90s, and she did this at our Valentine's dinner dance. And then there was another special dance she did with two partners that she reprised at her 100th birthday party. See if we can watch that one. Thank you. Awesome. Ruby was the main one who helped us build the music building. And even when she could no longer speak, she would once in a while be brought to the unplugged service where she would sit in that front pew and you could watch her tapping her feet to the beat of the music, reminding us of another classic dance of hers, I Hope You Dance. When I came to St. Joseph's in 2001, I started cottage meetings, people's homes to solicit their hopes and dreams for our future together. And when Ruby noticed that most of them were at night, she said that she wanted to host one during the day. So many thoughts were shared by many of the ladies who came. And when she was ready to speak herself, there was a hush in the room to hear Miss Ruby speak. And she simply said, well, you got to do something, because the same old thing isn't going to work here anymore. And she became one of our biggest supporters of not only this service, but the other innovative things we tried to do. Barbara Weston. During our capital campaign some years ago, we asked people to find ways they could give sacrificially to the campaign. Barbara basically worked for minimum wage at the local Walgreens, but she took her stewardship seriously. She was so excited when she figured out what she could do to help. And this is the testimony that Barbara gave.
My name is Barbara Weston. I currently work at Walgreens as a service clerk. I moved to Florida from New Hampshire approximately 2.5 years ago and have been attending St. Joseph's for about 2 years. Recently, Father Marty explained how he and his family could make a commitment for the capital campaign and asked all of us to do the same. Initially, I was puzzled as to how I could give much of anything. My first thought, after thinking it over, was I could limit my going to Dunkin' Donuts to once a week, taking about $5 per week, 52 weeks a year, times 3 years, that comes to $780. I am still looking for ways to increase my commitment. I'm making a commitment because St. Joseph's has given me and continues to give me much in support and caring, and I want to pass it along to others. Thank you.
Barbara gifted us with that story in the Gospels of the widow's mite, that it's not the amount of dollars that we give to God, but it is the spirit in which it is given, expecting nothing in return, and giving not from our abundance, but sacrificial giving for the sake of something greater. Barbara became known to regular Walgreens visitors because every time she finished scanning your purchases, as you were walking out the door, she would always say to everyone, "Have a blessed day." Well, about 6 months after her funeral, I happened to be back at Walgreens. And a person I did not know checked me out, and as I was walking out, said, "Have a blessed day." Taken aback a bit, I walked back and I said, "Did you know Barbara Weston?" "Oh, yes," she said. "She's a big legend around here." In her honor, I decided to say what she used to say to everyone leaving. "Have a blessed day." Barbara's legacy was creating a thin place where you felt the presence of God all around. She did, and we experienced God breaking through. I could go on and on, but all of us have special ones and times where we have experienced God breaking through in our lives. So, borrowing a line from Mr. Rogers, I invite you to take, along with me, 11 seconds to think of the people and events who have helped you to see God's presence breaking through in your life. 11 seconds. Whomever and whatever you've been thinking about, as Mr. Rogers would say, how pleased they must feel to know the difference you feel that you have made. I know my heart's full of that pleasure because of all of you. For me, what I think about is this. In 1998, a 3-year-old Demery carried our wedding photo up to the altar as part of the ceremony, one of the symbols of what we bring to ministry. If we could show that video now, if it'll play. It was a special moment. Especially when that photo, as big as she handed it to her sister Bree to place in front of the altar. But then, she hightailed it down that main aisle. Because she had something else to do. She was going to come back up that aisle with my mom, Mary, and Dee's mom, Mommy Dot. And so they gathered at the front, my mom and Dee's mom, holding the bread and wine for the Eucharist, and surrounded by Dee and Bree and the other dancers, held up the bread and the wine for us that day. What an incredible symbol of what we believe when we gather here every time with the communion of saints, past, present, and future gathered together. Every Thanksgiving sermon, those of you who have been here, know that I give out a 5-pound Hershey's chocolate bar, trying to find someone I don't know to whom to give the gift to, because it symbolizes that unconditional, total love that God gives to each one of us. Not because of anything we do, but just because God's nature is to love. So no 5-pound chocolate bar today, but perhaps the appropriate image is this, that when we are allowed to be that piñata broken open, it is the unconditional love of God that will break through. Well done. Thank you. You know, when I arrived here on March 11th of 2001, I borrowed a pair of my predecessor, Father Michael Cassell's shoes. They were huge. They're like 13 or 14. And I held them up and said, I will not attempt to fill these shoes. And I hope you do not expect me to. I carry that image to you today because I do not leave my shoes behind. If we continue to open ourselves up to what the God who is in charge dreams for you, the next 23 and a half years will be even more exciting than these. And who knows, you might just raise the roof off this thin place. So I put on my pilgrimage jacket. Our pilgrimage continues, though our paths may change. I wrote a song to sort of express this based on the fact that it's all about love, that as Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians 13, if we don't have love, we don't got nothing. I know I'd never get through it singing it, so I invite the band to share it with us.